The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing. A special look at theft. It's on the rise in a worsening economy. Almost nothing discussed about it. We'll hear from Christina Lusa from Natural News about what they're stealing and where. Then we're going to talk about protein-rich diets linked to liver cancer, something I warned Robert Atkins about a long time ago. And also, mother's milk protects baby's delicate intestines, and a widely used cancer drug causes deadly holes in the GI tract. Why is it that when a drug that's commonly used that does not show that it can reverse cancer is not taken off the market, and yet they're doing all they can to take vitamins off the market that actually save lives? Today, you're going to hear something you have not heard before. We're going to begin, and this is just the beginning, an in-depth expose today of an important piece of legislation that President Obama has signed. And it's Agenda 21. Now, there was the 86th executive order by Obama, 13575. So it's a matter of historical fact. It's a matter of law. And have you heard a word about it? Not a word. Maybe Resha Madow or Keith Oberman. No, not a word. Why should you be interested in this? Because it's part of the United States government's plans to confiscate people's property, large tracts of American property. It's part of the White House's Rural Council. Well, what are they doing? What's their motives? We'll be talking with Debbie Coffey on this. She's a citizen journalist for Marty Oakley's PPJ Gazette, and she poured on foreign owned mining companies that buy ranches for the water rights and mining of aquifers and federally controlled public lands that sell and lease land at $2 an acre to oil and gas companies. It's about the move to privatize American land, some of the most pristine, beautiful land in America, as well as taking people's land through eminent domain so that the gas companies, the oil companies, the coal companies can exploit it. And you have no say-so in it. And to make sure that you don't argue with them, they've also loaded in, as you will hear, some martial law draconian legislation. They brought in Homeland Security. They brought in Justice Department and all these other agencies in the CIA. What in the world would the CIA have to be doing in a rural program? Well, you'll see. So this is for all of my liberal friends out there who, in the intellectual conceit that you're known for and famous for, where you sit around and argue and stab each other in the head with your ideas, but never think that there could be a conspiracy, never think that anyone's actually doing something bad in the government. Oh, what's wrong with one more gigantic government agency taking away our rights and our freedoms? Why be concerned about that when we can be concerned about Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann? Well, for the rest of you who actually care about this country, this program today is for you, and that's the majority of this audience. And maybe this is a wake-up call to those neo-fascists who call themselves constitutionalists, who are so removed from the Constitution, so removed as the Patriot Act, or as the so-called patriots are. So we're going to get down and dirty today. We're going to take you inside actual legislation, secret meetings inside the White House. You're going to hear a secret set of memos that have been exposed, or a matter of public record, of how the government's agencies have been secretly meeting to decide how they can keep this from Congress and the American public. In other words, take away your land so they can give it to the corporations that control the government, and if you try to intervene, if you try to say you don't want this, you will be arrested. Didn't think it could happen, did you? Well, of course, on the left, nothing like this can happen. There's such a limited view of life. It's embarrassing, the lack of intellectual honesty. or commitment to higher ideals. My God, why in the world do you think so many Americans are leaving the left and the right and going towards a more independent mindset? And if you don't think that's the case, then you are dinosaurs. You are being left behind. You are becoming irrelevant. And I'll discuss that in a little bit. Am I concerned? You bet I'm concerned. I've waited too long to see people who know better do better, and they haven't. Now to the latest on health and nutrition. This is going to take a half hour of our program, this particular segment, and this is just the beginning. On health and nutrition today, what is the one mineral that could really help you prevent osteoporosis? It's magnesium. The latest research on this shows that magnesium, which is taken out of the body when we have soft drinks, because of the high acid and the also the high capacity for taking water out of the body as a diuretic, we lose important minerals every time you drink coffee or every time that you have a soft drink. And these minerals are important for our bones. This is from Albert Einstein's College of Medicine. Quote, adolescence is therefore a crucial time for bone development, and any factors adversely impacting on bone acquisition during this time can potentially have long-standing detrimental effects. Well, what are we doing? Think of how many kids are drinking soft drinks. And now it's very common to have a lot of caffeine. Both are bad. In a recent Harvard study, researchers examined the relationship between soda drinking habits, activity levels, and history of bone fractures for 460 adolescent girls, and found that 9 and 10-year-old girls who drink soda, which is most girls, have 500% increased risk of bone fractures compared to those who do not drink carbonated beverages. Quote, this is from Harvard School of Public Health, from a Dr. Grace Wysak. Our findings have implications for both the health of teenagers and the health of women at later ages. So get off the soft drinks, get off the coffee, and help protect your bones. I'm an advocate for higher levels of vitamin C. Now, it has to be based upon what kind of vitamin C we take. If you take the cheap vitamin C you get in the discount stores or drug stores, you're not going to have the same bioavailability, and you're going to have mainly just ascorbic acid. But if you take the better formulated brands that have been formulated for buffering agents and for the ascorbates, then you have higher utilization, and hence you can take 5 or 10 times more before you hit bowel tolerance. Therefore, more goes into your system and protects you. This is the latest in the journal Hypertension. Higher vitamin C levels lowers blood pressure. Quote, an article published in the journal Hypertension reveals an association between increasing levels of vitamin C and reduced risk of high blood pressure. Researchers in England evaluated 20,926 men and women 40 to 79 years of age who enrolled in the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer Prospective Study. And blood pressure, plasma vitamin C levels, and other factors were measured. And they found that those who took the most vitamin C had a substantial reduction in blood pressure. So, my suggestion? See if you can do 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every 2 hours. For, let's say, 10 hours a day. That would give you 5,000 milligrams to begin. That is a good level. And then if you have particular conditions, then you go up from there, clear up to 20,000 levels. And then if you have cancer, AIDS, or other conditions, you can go up to 100 or 200,000 intravenous. A lot of people are stressed all the time. It's how we deal with stress that is important. This is the latest study, and this comes from a major study at Utah State University, and it says, new study, exposure, high levels of stress throughout life increases your risk of Alzheimer's. And there's a simple reason for this, because when you're stressed, you create cortisol, and cortisol is pro-inflammatory. and pro-inflammatory cortisol interferes in our musculoskeletal conditioning. It can have deadly effects upon our brain, and in effect, you burn out your brain. So yes, we can't change all the things that can stress us. We can change how we want to deal with it. Meditation, a more natural and beautiful environment, just deep breathing, calming ourselves down. These are the ways that we can deal with stress and therefore prevent inflammation, which in turn can help prevent Alzheimer's. This is from mainstream science, Science Daily, study done at UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. Quote, as unhealthy food outlets multiply, teens eat more junk. And, of course, what do you think the upshot is? Well, quote, nearly three-quarters of California teenagers live or go to school in neighborhoods that are crowded with fast food restaurants, and they're eating there. As a result, they're not eating healthy foods because, well, when you eat the foods at these fast food places, then you go home, even if you have a good meal prepared, you're less likely to find it interesting because the fast food meals are made to be salty and crunchy and spicy or soft and sweet. And therefore, whole grain meal or seaweed salad or a nice soup is not going to be able to compete because people become addicted to very specific mouthfeels, taste, aftertaste, and how full they feel when they eat a fast food meal. Also, it's immediate. You walk in, you pay, you get your burgers, fries, pizza, you sit down, you eat quickly, and then you're on the run. Now imagine what it's like for a parent who cares enough about their child's health to go out to a farmer's market or a food co-op or health food store, buy the best foods, organic, locally grown, takes the time to make as many things raw and interesting, juicing, and the kid says, I'm not hungry. Why not? Well, I just ate something on the way home. I had a pizza. I'm not hungry. That's part of the dilemma. So how do you cope with that? That is my question I'm going to ask now as our issue. If you are a parent who's trying to do the right thing by feeding your children what you know they need, how do you get them to a place where they're at least open to eating healthier, changing the way they're eating and what they're eating, especially with all the peer pressure and the frenetic lifestyles that they're living? When you're asking them to enjoy slow food, slow eating, in a more relaxed environment, how do you go about doing that? Have you been successful? If so, please share with us how that happens. If not, if you've tried and it's failed, what has been the outcome? What has been the feedback? I'd like to hear from you now. Please call us at 888-874-4888. This is our issue part of the program where we throw out an issue and we ask you, anywhere that you can call in North America, to call us with your answers. 888-874-4888. Because I get this question all the time. I don't want to answer, give my thoughts on it. I'd like to hear yours. And by the way, this Saturday, I'll be in the farmer's market at filming the great chef, David Boulay, showing how he shops for food. And then we're going to film him teaching a class to Japanese master chefs about how you can better understand the energy value of food. And I was recently filming him, and he did something that was so remarkable. I've never seen this done before. And this is for a brand new full television special I'm doing on him. We're all done in the filming. I've been filming him over 2 years. But this man is so sensitive to the taste of food, something he says Americans have lost their capacity to do. They could regain it, but you have to understand how to do it. He said, I'll show you the sensitivity of taste. And he said, take any type of water and pour it into a glass, including tap water. And he wasn't looking, and I went over in his kitchen, and I had some water from a tap, other different bottled water. Each one was a different bottled water. And he didn't see any of this. No one saw it. And then he came over. He looked at each. He smelled it. He took a little taste. And he accurately told me the source of each of 8 glasses of water. There was no gimmick. There was no trick. He has one of the most unique palates ever. That is something that we need to know about. And you will, because I did a 5-hour film conversation with him on that, and with lots of interesting tips. Anyhow, one of the things I'm going to be talking to David about is, how do you get people to change their taste preferences? So I'm asking you now, and I'm interested in hearing what you have to say. And finally, fructose consumption increases the risk factors for heart disease. Now, you've heard me talk about why fructose is so dangerous and why it's so bad and why we should exclude it. Finally, mainstream science, as reported in Science Daily, that's an official publication to all of the scientists in America, done at the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, says the following, quote, study found that adults who consumed high fructose corn syrup for 2 weeks as 25% of their daily caloric requirement had increased blood levels of cholesterol and triglycerides, which have been shown to be indicators for increased risk of heart disease. And I can assure you that the average American consumes at least that amount from high fructose corn syrup. It's your number one form of sugar sweetener in the United States. And especially in the summertime, when people are drinking soft drinks with the fructose in it, oh yeah, bad for you. So understand, you risk having a heart attack, you risk having diabetes when you continue that way. Now, we're going to take your calls in a moment, but I was recently asked, in fact, at an airport yesterday, I was asked, who am I going to vote for? And I said, I hold the vote as a precious right, and I refuse to abrogate that to the lesser of two idiots. Therefore, if there is not a true progressive populist running for office, I will not vote, and I will not do what the Democrats continue to do, and that is believe that any Democrat is better than any Republican without ever considering those who are truly qualified, like a Ralph Nader, and therefore say, well, we'll vote. And I say, if you do, then you change nothing. You provide no blueprint for authentic change for the future. You do not allow a forum for debate in ways that would not otherwise be provided. You just continue the same, believing that the Democrats and Republicans are different. We independents know they're one and the same. I'm not the only one who believes that our voting is literally a screwed-up process.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to be any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. F*** hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck 'em. Fuck 'em. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
And let's come back in a moment with your thoughts and calls on the question of the day, the issue of the day. What are you doing to get your children to eat healthier? Back in a moment, our number 888-874-4888. Listening in from 191 countries around the world, we welcome you. You're listening to the number one listened to progressive radio program in the world. And we thank you for giving us your time, energy, and trust. Hopefully, the information that we part each day will be to your capacity to make positive change. We are proactive in making change, as you will see from things coming up in the next 4 weeks. We have a massive, massive program planned for closing down Indian Point and making other changes, working together. Let's say hello to Yvonne from New York City. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yes, I have two teenagers. My daughter is 16. My son is 17 years old. And my kids are adopted. They are in the family for 3 years. When they came, they used to have all sort of problems, like headaches and stomach problems. And we started to teach them how to eat properly and show them the kids around them, the fat kids, the kids that was always sick, and show them that they have a choice. They can eat like the other kids and be cool, but sick, or they can eat the way we teach them how to eat in the house and be healthy and won't be spending time at the house, losing school, won't be spending time at the hospital. My kids bring their own food to school. Kids does make fun of my kids, but got to the point where they wanted to try green beans, and they had no idea what green bean was, and they like it. And my daughter actually was invited to do the cooking after school as health class, and they are actually doing well with bringing their own food to school.
That's very, very positive. I'm glad to hear that, Yvonne. I have a suggestion. Starting when I get back into the city, I'm filming today in North Carolina, a whistleblower from the nuclear industry from Three Mile Island that's been in hiding because they tried to kill him, like Karen Silkwood. But in any case, I'm going to talk about something when I get back, about giving every parent who has a kid willing to take healthy foods into the class, about getting the video power food shown in the class, giving it free to the teacher, any teacher that will show power food so kids can see bad foods, good foods, and how to make even better foods for children and teenagers. So I'll talk more about that when I come back to the city. And let's see if we can't get maybe 10 or 20 or 30 schools where the whole school becomes proactive in being healthy. By the way, one school, a charter school in Newark, where all the kids there are under the poverty level, they're all poor, and the very first day with Mrs. Gray's school there, they got up and we filmed them talking about their illnesses. All of them had diabetes, they had depression, they had arthritis and fibromyalgia, high blood pressure and pain. 4 months later, after working all together, everything had changed. Lost weight, no more disease, they were eating organic, they were eating whole grains and beans, saving money. And it was very exciting and still is. Verna Gray is her name, one of the most courageous, intelligent, and empowered women I've ever met, and she alone made that school happen. And to the hundreds of students and faculty and parents, they're very grateful to her. But she had the courage to say, we're going to change the diet of everyone in here, and she did it. One woman did it. Could I do that in the public schools? Absolutely not. But I could in a charter school, so I go where change can happen. And so I'm willing to go into any school in the United States and to show how you can change the health of your children, change the health of their parents. And what was interesting, the children had so much positive change that they actually did a discussion on the final night that we filmed. And Bertolt Reimer, the station manager, WBI, went with me to watch this. And the mayor's office was there to give a citation for this good work. And I said, don't stop here. Let every school in the nation know the positive results, because where else do you have every kid has been undiagnosed as ADD and ADHD? The parents are no longer diabetic. You've lost massive amounts of weight. You're giving up the junk food. You're getting rid of the ghetto food. You're saying we may be poor, but we're not stupid and we're not helpless. We're making healthy choices. We're no longer going to allow those people to exploit us. We're going to have a farmer's market. We're going to have organic produce grown in our backyards and on our rooftops. All that from this one school. So imagine what kind of effort you could make if, starting with your kids taking, Yvonne, healthier food that you make for them into the schools, imagine what that could do to every kid that says, hey, this tastes good. Oh, I didn't know this would taste good. Giving them a vegan pizza, one that has sprouted flour, better than regular flour, one that has vegan cheese instead of regular cheese, so they can wean off dairy, wean off flour products and gluten products. Think of taking in some veggie burgers so that people realize there's something other than a hamburger or hot dog. There's a lot you can do, and do it in steps. So you can, you know, don't go from where you're at to raw foods. That's not going to be a practical jump for most people, and you don't want to alienate people, because then you're going to act like a food Nazi. You've got to be pragmatic. You've got to be realistic about what we're dealing with. And unfortunately, we've had self-righteous people who didn't understand what it is to be a human being before declaring themselves some pure and above it all. We're not. Nobody's pure and above it all. We're all making the same honest effort each day to enhance the well-being, and you can't do that unless you give people examples. So do what you're doing. Do more of it, Yvonne. Thank you very much for your good efforts. Tim from New Jersey, you're on. Tim dropped. Okay, let's say hello to Lanice from New Jersey. Lanice, you're on.
Hello, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very picky eater. I have two kids. One eats what I cook. I've been vegan for a while, and I make I make it as appealing as possible, and one of my kids just eats it all up. The other one is really stuck on, you know, donuts and pizza and all of that. So what has worked for me with a very, very picky eater is in the mornings, since I've also gone raw, just myself, not the family, I make a wonderful smoothie, which he drinks, and that has, it's packed with all the things that I can stick in it without changing the flavor too much, and he drinks that. So I know that in the morning he gets started, and he also will accept a vegetable juice, so I juice that, and right now it's just carrots and celery with a couple of apples to sweeten it up, and he'll do that. So I think that if you have a kid who really just wants to live on donuts and he's really difficult, if you start him off with the smoothies for breakfast, you're giving him a good start, and then some time throughout the day give him a fresh vegetable juice, it works.
Good for you. Now, I would expand that a little bit. First, ask your child, what is the child's favorite taste? If it's chocolate or vanilla or strawberry, then add that into the smoothie. But make sure you're giving him raw coconut oil, flaxseed oil, a group of berries, either fresh, frozen, or compounded powders, a combination of green and reds, which is the vegetables, the phytonutrients, spike it with some vitamin C, buffered vitamin C, and a B complex. Now, when they start by drinking that, you're giving them quality protein, carbohydrates, essential fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, and antioxidants. That's good. That becomes what's going to empower them over the next 4 hours. Then, when they get home from school, give them another drink. This way, at least twice a day, you're getting a lot of good nutrients in the body that are actually the building blocks of the hormones and enzyme systems that the kid needs to keep their immune system strong. So until such time that they wean themselves away from the donuts, at least, let's say, 60% of what's going in their body today is better than compensating for the sugars and the refined carbohydrates that they have not yet weaned themselves off of. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All the best, Lenise. And one more, Vincent from New Jersey. Hi, Vincent. Vincent?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me? Hello?
Sure can.
Hey, I just want to say thank you to you and your staff for all the great work you do. My wife and I have an 8- and a 5-year-old, two girls, and even before we had kids, we made the decision to lead by example, and we try to keep as much healthy food in the house. We let them see us eating fruits and vegetables all day long. We'd rather grab that. And we have a garden in the back. We have, you know, a little bit of property, so we have the ability to do that. And we engage them in the growing of the seeds and, you know, and then planting and cultivating and harvesting. And by that example, I think it's sort of giving them the tools to make their own decisions. I mean, we do have, sometimes we'll have a bag of chips and stuff in the house just so it's there, so they, you know, they can, you know, grab or whatever if they want. So we're not, like you said before, food Nazis, because then if they're in a different environment than ours, they'll be able to make that choice themselves. So I think by example is the best way to do it.
Okay, well, there's two things you could expand on that idea, which is a good idea. First, you can make your own chips from sprouted flour. If it's sprouted flour, it's gluten-free and it's healthy. Secondly, you can then make all kinds of interesting, like a very mild, a hot, which is still very healthy, a dip, and give them the kind of dip. Give them a variety of dips. Give them a lemon hummus dip, or give them a garlicky baba ganoush dip. Give them a tomato salsa dip. But it's on good chips, so now they think they're eating something that's not healthy, but it is.
Okay.
All right. Again,
thank you very much.
Be creative. Remember, we must realize that in any time we're growing, we have to grow on a spectrum. And no two people grow at the same pace. Some people can make quantum changes. Others, it has to be very piecemeal. And we must be patient and understanding that we can't force people to change at the rate we want them to. They have to change at the rate that they're going to. So don't give up on people. Instead, show compassion, show sensitivity, and show kindness all the time in this effort. And then I suggest anyone who can put a sprout garden in your backyard and invite your neighbors and their children to come over each week, once a week, and give them as a gift And I believe that people should share the gifts they have with their neighbors for free as a sign that you care about them as a human being and you're their neighbor. And you give them a bowl of sprouts. You give them a bag of sprouts. And they're wonderful to taste, and they're crunchy, and they're different. And you use different blends on them. I like to put lemon juice and garlic into a spray bottle and spritz it onto a sprout salad. And suddenly it gives a whole different flavor to it. And it's within 3 to 7 days you can grow any sprout. Alfalfa, sunflower, mung bean, fenugreek. You have 40 different things you can sprout. And now the kid is aware that sprouts exist, that they are tasty, and that if you're doing it, hey, why can't they do it? So we can start getting people into doing something that's relatively easy and expensive and no high tech, okay?
Thank you.
All the best to you, Vincent from New Jersey. That's all the time we have for these calls today. And I want to thank you all for calling in and sharing your insights on this. It's very much appreciated. Back in a moment, inside Studio New York, and then our guests. Please stay with us.
It's 12 at midnight. Don't close your eyes. Your soul's left alive, and I'll be by your side. I've come to take you there, show you how to care. Just be aware that you'll have to share. I want you love.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go into our studio and say hello to Elizabeth, who reads your mail each day. I can't. I'm on the road. I don't even have computer access most of the time, and I'm traveling or filming nonstop. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Gary. We've had an email first from Dorothy. She's a retired professor. She's been listening to the archives of your Progressive Radio Commentary Hour, which is every Monday at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. And she strongly believes it should be obligatory listening for every college student in the USA, as it would radically change our perception, she writes. So that's nice to know she's listening there. We have a lot of information here that shows that we are being hit. There's 91 million people hitting the Progressive Radio Network shows, and particularly your show. And this just goes to show that people like Bill O'Reilly, who say that we have 20% of the public are liberal and the majority are actually conservatives, he's very wrong, because our figures obviously show that there's a huge amount of people that want to listen to progressive shows. We've had another email from somebody. This is about an article that's in the Sacramento Bee by Anita Creamer, and basically it's saying that people that are in their 50s are in a terrible place in when it comes to employment. And this is something that I know that you've mentioned quite a lot on your show before. But for example, there's a man called Brian Blatchkey. He's 54 in West Sacramento. He's not brought home a full-time salary or benefit since 2008. It's saying that people in their 50s, they're too young to get benefits, but they've had long, they hold expectations about their jobs, that they're going to be long-term. They're supposed to be by now at the peak of their careers and the peak of their earning, but they're fighting to stay employed. The Urban Institute research, shows that the unemployment rate for men and women in their 50s has increased for older men. And older men who don't have college degrees are being the hardest hit. And it takes on average 52 weeks to get employment if you're over 55, as opposed to 35 weeks for younger people. And those that are able to get employment generally have two or three jobs. And also, the worst thing is that they're in this terrible place because they can't retire due to the recession and our shifting demographics, says the article, but they also can't get a job. So, and it's a terrible, it says...
And they can't get Social Security, they're too young.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the great jurist Clarence Darrow?
No.
He said, "I don't pretend to know what many ignorant men are sure of." And zeal without knowledge is fire without light, Thomas Fuller. What this means is that right now we have so many people my age, the baby boomers, who found that their utopian dream, the American dream, buy the house, have the family, work hard, be honest, be diligent, and your future is assured. All that is now cast aside. And only those who were able to financially be conservative, and there I am very conservative financially. I do not believe in living through debt. I believe that it is fool's gold. It looks like gold, but it isn't. And as long as you continue to believe that as long as you can get something through debt, it's okay, until the time comes when you cannot sustain what you have, and then the fear of losing it. Well, right now, this is something people in this audience are probably not aware of. 11.6 million American homes, that's about 40 million Americans, as of right now, who have not lost their homes. Their homes are underwater. They're going to lose their homes. They will lose everything they have. Everything. They will go broke. Or they'll walk away from their homes and have to find a place to live. That's not a part of the 22 million Americans who've already lost their homes. Those are new, and that will be over the next 2 years. That means we will have the largest number of people without homes. What do you think that's going to do to the price of homes?
They're going to be really rocketing.
Do you know how many homes the banks are keeping off the market now, called the gray market, where you don't even know that a home is been foreclosed on, but is not being offered for sale? Do you know how many there are?
No.
4.5 million.
Wow.
Do you know what's going to happen when you have 4.5 million that are not on the market now, and another, let's just be conservative. Let's not go to 11.6 million. Let's go to 8.5 million. The latest number, the two scholars in the field said, is likely to be foreclosed on. You're dealing then with over 13 million vacant homes. You realize that that will collapse the market by 60% from where we're at right now.
Right.
So if you suddenly had 60% less value in your home right now, you realize that almost every single American, unless they own their home completely, will lose all the value in it, and it'll be underwater. And that will be the biggest single economic collapse in American history. That will dwarf anything in the Great Depression. We will simply be bankrupt, and there's where your social anarchy will happen. I'm telling you now, this is going to happen. It's not will it. I'm saying it's the next 2 years. So when people are thinking about the crisis they're in, where they can't find a job, and they're a certain age, and younger people can be hired at half the wages, and seniority is gone, unions are being destroyed, the Koch brothers, and the move by corporatists on the right and left. Remember, this is right and left. Obama's just as much culpable as Bill Clinton is on the left. And the liberals and the Rachel Maddow's and all the other people, the Lawrence O'Donnell's, and even Bill Maher's, where they're a little disappointed in Obama. You know, shame on him for this, but otherwise they support him. Man, are they on the wrong side of history. And why do you think that we had 91 million Americans go to Google and Google Progressive Radio? Because they want progressive ideas. They want to hear the Danny Schechters. They want to hear the Michikakus and the Helen Holocaust. They want to hear the people who have vital ideas, vitalism that is not ideologically based. They don't want to be limited any longer by the lies, deception, the mindlessness of the left or the right. So O'Reilly is wrong about most things, but he's really wrong when he says that most Americans are conservative. Not true. Most Americans today are financially conservative, which is what they should be in their own personal lives. They should be saving money, not spending it. They shouldn't be buying things they can't afford. That's just prudence. But when it comes to, do people want a universal health care? Yes, they do. So how does he reconcile? They want to save the money they have because they're afraid of financial uncertainty in the future. They don't want to waste their money on things they don't need and then have something like food or utilities or gasoline for their car that they cannot afford because they blew it at the mall on something stupid. Instead, they're saying we should have these safeguards. Ah, that means we're liberal on some things, conservative on others, and that makes people look at what is independence of thought. Only from independence of thought can you make reasoned choices. So if I was this man, first and foremost, I would ask myself, am I stuck in a place of fear and insecurity and uncertainty because I'm waiting for those that I've aligned myself with politically or economically to save the day? It's not going to happen. The American dream is not coming back. The American nightmare, an absolute cataclysmic economic impact on 200 million Americans is about to happen in the next 2 years. It's already happening to 100 million, the poor that we don't care about and have no advocates and have no voice, the lower working class that are working, but at wages that are not sustainable and are stressed to the max, and then the middle class, the ones Lou Dobbs can find but can't find the others, who will not make any changes. The upper middle class, who are more often conservative financially and politically, who are in gated communities, not going to join in anything. The professional class are not going to be a part of any solution. The lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, you don't see them online. You don't see them protesting. You don't see them putting themselves at risk ever, with rare exception, like a Noam Chomsky. And the rich, who don't give a damn about anyone, with rare exception, except themselves and their lifestyle and make sure their comforts are in place. And the super rich that are, quite frankly, the most emotionally disturbed psychopaths I've ever witnessed. So look at that scenario and ask yourself this. Who controls power? The super rich, the rich, and the upper middle class. Who supports those shifts? The middle class. Who has no power? The working, lower middle class, and the poor. And they're half the population. So you have this enormous shift in who's being able to make choices, and it's the powerful who can't make choices, the poor middle class. Why? Because they have no organization, they have no leaders, they have no plans, they have no agenda, so they're like in a life raft without water or food, cast in the middle of the ocean, and they can't see land. The others, well, they're still on the ship. The ship is the Titanic, but it's taking a long time to sink. So that's where we're at this moment. It will not get better. I'm not being pessimistic. I'm being pragmatic. It will not get better. Why do you think we're doing the programs we're doing to try to emphasize people should become proactive and start making changes? Because the people who are in power now are clueless about how to help them and indifferent to their needs. They've all aligned themselves behind the powerful and the lobbyist, and that's the way it's going to remain and only get worse. So this man should become proactive. Stop looking for his job to come back. It's not. Stop looking for someone to come and get him a job. They're not. And instead start looking at the assets he has that he can better utilize. So he can sit at home and fret. Or he can do things like, if he's got a car, put the word out you're willing to share your car with other people. If you do have a home, that you're willing to rent out rooms and beds and refurnish your garage or your attic or your basement so other people can share. Other people can barter. So you can work with people. This is where the biggest pain in his life is, going from being me and what's important to me to we. Friend, I can't do it alone, but with your help I can. And someone saying, good, I can do this, you can do that, and we can get someone else to do something else. That's what he has to do. Otherwise, right now, you're looking at Italy in 1928. You're looking at fascism in the United States. We've become a police state. Could you imagine if we could rewrite history and go back to Mussolini? Because it was from Mussolini and fascism that Nazism gave a lot of lessons. They learned the lessons of Mussolini. Right. And we are not learning any lessons. And shame on the left to learn not a damn lesson. And shame on the right, because we don't expect them to ever do anything right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go over and say hello to my guests. Debbie Coffey, standing by now. Is it Coffee or Kofi?
Coffee. Hi.
Coffee. Okay. Nice to have you with us, Debbie.
Oh, thanks for asking me to be a guest on your show.
Debbie, we're going to talk about the White House Rural Council and the turning of public land to private corporate interest. This has gotten no publicity anywhere. I want you to listen carefully to this prior to us having our discussion.
Well, is the federal government plotting a huge land grab? Republican Utah Congressman Rob Bishop claims that 13 million acres, maybe even more, all throughout the West are at stake. and he says he has documents from the Department of Interior to prove it. Congressman Bishop is kind enough to join us now to talk about this. Great to have you today.
Thanks for being here.
And it's nice to have you in D.C. because you're actually vacationing here this week. So instead of going home, you're with us helping the local tourism industry.
It's a great place to be with you always, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about this potential land grab issue. You found out through an internal memo that was within the Department of Interior, initially leaked missing some pages. You found those missing pages. What about that has you concerned about the federal government trying to get some its hands on some land out west?
Well, first of all, we have not received all the documents yet. We received the first set of documents. There's still more that have been promised to us that have not yet come. And what they show is that even though this government already owns one out of every 3 acres in America, and disproportionately in the West, they still want to buy more land, they want to control private property around it, and they want to do it even if Congress does not okay it. In fact, the documents were how to go around Congress to implement this kind of plan. What this means for the West particularly is a stopping of our economy, more jobs will be lost. Public education, which requires property tax as well as resource taxes, would be vastly hurt in the West. It's a devastating concept, and especially when the discussion was all about how do we do it even if Congress says no.
All right, so we want to make sure that we include the response that we've gotten from the Department of Interior, their explanation for this. We have a part of that we want to show you. They say the preliminary internal discussion draft, referring to this memo, reflects some brainstorming discussions within BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, but no decisions have been made about which areas, if any, might merit more serious review and consideration. They say they're trying to be wise stewards of the land. Is that a good enough explanation for you?
No, because even though it may be brainstorming sessions, it still tells me what they're planning on doing, and they have implemented those along the way. So there are efforts to try and expand how much money they have. They want to be able, even though we have a $15 million backlog in maintaining the lands we already want, they have already passed some pieces of legislation to give them $1 billion a year to buy more property to expand what we already have. So I have seen elements of what those brainstorming sessions are in bits and pieces as they become coming through, and it still shows the same mindset. They want to cap more land. They want to control more land. They are willing to go after private property. And I'm sorry, this is devastating to the economy of the West.
You bet it is, and I'm concerned. As a certified organic farmer, as someone who is a custodian of the land and teach other people how to honor the land, what does this mean? Debbie, take us through this and show us what this means for the average person. And by the way, for the land-based stations listening, you can continue listening to my discussion on how Obama signed Agenda 21, which is really a part of the UN resolution, where a White House Rural Council, working with major corporate interests behind the scenes, wants to use land, millions of acres, and private property for corporate interests, for coal mining and oil extraction and gas hydrofracking and plutonium exploration, and what that will mean to destroy the environment, to take away our rights, and in addition, how they're creating a police state mindset that if you wanted to protest this, you could end up being arrested. So please take us on this journey and explain this to us.
Hi, Gary. I've been going to the roundups of all of our wild horses off their federally protected herd management areas and seen all the tricks the Bureau of Land Management is doing there. You know, they never prove there's an excess of horses. I don't see any photos. I don't see any videos of their flyover counts, their numbers. It's real fuzzy math. That's one thing. I've gone to the roundups. And they actually, it's like a military operation. You know, you get a bunch of old ladies out there like me and retired school teachers and stuff. When you drive there, they've got your cars boxed in. You're treated like a criminal, basically. You have somebody watching you every second. You know, they consider you, if you're interested in the animals, then you're suddenly an eco-terrorist. And if you write about it, you receive harassment from local deputies and stuff if you're driving on the roads. One thing I think it's important to look into, Gary, you're one of the few people that really realizes what's going on with this Agenda 21. It always sounded hokey to me till someone goes on the UN website and you look at the document, Agenda 21. It's a 40-chapter book, and it's the action plan of the United Nations. And what people see is that Agenda 21, this is to get communally and collectively owned and managed land. This is what the BLM is doing. It's very hard to get documents, even when you file a Freedom of Information Act with them. I've filed many. It takes a long time if you get them at all. They'll ask you, unless it's certain FOIA departments, but if you ask someone from the BLM for something, so you don't want to, Bureau of Land Management, because you don't want to go through the trouble of a FOIA, it'll be like, well, what do you want that for? What are you going to do with it? Things like that. What I noticed, I went to some water. There's a group of farmers and ranchers in Eureka, Nevada. And I went to the water hearings at the Nevada water. There's a mining company called General Molly. Well, they took financing from Han Long Bank, and Han Long Bank took it from a government-owned bank of China. So they're buying one of our biggest sources of molybdenum. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, in the United States. And China considers this a strategic metal. And when I went to these water board meetings, there were farmers and ranchers that had generations of water rights in their family. And this mining company, they go around and they buy water rights. They buy ranches to get water rights. And they're worried that all the mining use is going to drop, take a lot of water from the aquifers. So but what the BLM does to facilitate this, they tell the mining company to only do a 10-foot water drawdown map, where if there's even a 1-foot water drawdown, streams will dry up. So the BLM is really facilitating the mining company, not the farmers and ranchers that have been there for generations.
Let me read something. This is from Colorado. From Denver Post, quote, Montezuma County Sheriff Dennis Spruill is awaiting for his conscience to tell him. Should he start handing out tickets this week to U.S. Forest Service agents who are closing back county roads? Should he cut locks on gates that shut off access to public lands? The fact that a county sheriff is considering such actions against the federal government is a good indication that more than a run-of-the-mill dust-up over road and trail closures on public lands is erupting in the far southwest corner of the state. In recent weeks, protesters have marched on the local Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management office located between Cortez and Dolores, calling Forest Service officials government pukes. Oregon, from Sarah Foster, News with Views. Josephine County, Oregon. When Gil Gilbertson was sworn in as a sheriff of Josephine County, a rural county in southwest Oregon, in 2007, he had 30 years of law enforcement experience behind him, both in the United States and with various military missions overseas. So when citizens of the county began coming to him complaining of harassment by U.S. Forest Service law enforcement officers, he said he'd investigate their concerns, figuring he could work things out with the local ranger district. After all, as the county's chief law enforcement officer, he was in the club. And moreover, he could speak their language, and he had gotten along with the feds, though he disagreed with their road closure policies and other efforts to keep the public off public lands, which covers 68% of the rural county. He contacted the local ranger district for information, but instead of answers to his, he was bluntly told that no, they couldn't discuss anything about any complaints by anyone with him, but he could file Freedom of Information Act. Well, he sent a blistering letter to the district ranger of the Wild Rivers Ranger District in Caves Junction, quote, as the chief law enforcement officer of this county elected by the citizens, saddled with the expectation and responsibility to safeguard their rights, I fully intend to uphold the laws against any threat, inappropriate, or unlawful actions against them. He was told to shut up. Utah, the San Juan Record. Quote, hunters in San Juan County face a number of roads that have been closed by national forests. Quote, we have been hunting this area since my dad was a kid, said one Blanding resident who asked that his name not be used. It seems like they have closed 1,000 roads. Montana, from HeleneAir.com, quote, "The Helena National Forest Service has truly been busy this summer. They have been excavating up in the forest, removing roads and portions of roads for the sole purpose of making them impossible to navigate. These are not maintained forest roads, yet the excuse they use was to save money in the long run by taking these roads off their maintenance list. The sole reason for these roads closures is to prevent sportsmen from accessing hunting grounds." Idaho, from the Capitol Press, quote, "A county government in Idaho has filed a legal complaint against the U.S. Forest Service over road closures that allegedly limit residents' mobility and discourage tourists. Valley County has asked a federal judge to declare the agency's travel management plan for the Payette National Forest as unlawful due to violations of environmental and administrative law." "They didn't do it right," said Matthew Williams, the county attorney. "No appeals, no hearings, nothing. They just closed it all down." Now, the road closures by the Forest Service have also been happening in California, Nevada, and other states. And former Sheriff Richard Mack, in his book, County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, summed it up when he said, quote, "The founders of America warned us that we would lose more freedoms from gradual encroachment by those in authority than by sudden usurpations from any foreign enemy. The county sheriff is our nation's last line of defense for the preservation and return to fundamental individual liberty." By the way, I don't believe that. I believe the bikers of America are our last. The bikers just kicked the shit out of any of these. We need the bikers, man. Don't ever downplay the bikers. They will give you a smackdown. We need them now. In any case, here's where we're at. And this is for all the liberals in America who never seemed concerned about how big government is, how encroaching on our civil liberties. They didn't say boo when we had the evisceration of our constitutional rights of habeas corpus, this illegal spying and wiretapping. And now the federal government is taking away millions of acres of public land, closing off the roads, bringing in over 22 separate agencies, including the CIA and Homeland Security, and making it so if you protest, you're now put on a terrorist watch list. If you complain, you're put on a terrorist watch list. If you write about this, you're put on a terrorist watch list. If you say, "I don't want you to own my property, it's my private property," you're put on a terrorist watch list. The federal government is now making the final steps that any protest you do will put you automatically on a terrorist protest list. The CIA is one of these 22 committees, and yet this is a part of the UN effort, and then they're going through what they call a public-private program. Their argument is that we just want to make sure there's more land for economic development. What does that mean? It means they want the rights to hydrofrack without any citizens' input, without any permission from the state, its representatives in the legislature, or its citizens. To do that, they require enormous amounts of water. So they're buying up all the water rights. They're renting the property for $2 an acre. So China and other countries and Saudi Arabia and other countries can come in here and they can explore and export any substance they want, oil, gas, uranium, out of the land. You have no rights. They can take your personal property through eminent domain. You have no rights. If you declare that this is unconstitutional, they will put you on a terrorist list, in which case they can arrest you and detain you indefinitely without representation. No one would be able to see you, not an attorney, not a family member. Now, is anything I just said inaccurate?
It's absolutely true, every single word of it.
So I want people to know how close we are to a complete fascist state, and all this done with the darling of the liberals, who are mindless and intellectually conceited, who refuse to see what is happening to their country when it comes to any longer being considered legitimate because they refuse in their intellectual arrogance and hubris to acknowledge what many people on the ground living outside of New York City and Brooklyn and the Lower East Side are experiencing, the real world. And by God, unless you're out there where I am and going state to state, town to town, county to county, farm to farm, and speaking with people, you are out of the loop of what is really happening in America. And I am so sick of hearing the people in L.A. and New York City act as if they really have a clue. Living on the Upper West Side, one of the most egregiously intellectually dishonest places on the earth, a cesspool, to tell me what the hell's going on when I'm out there and they're not, and especially at this radio station. And so I am angry at the audience in this radio station and its management. I'm angry at public television and public radio. I'm angry at the left and the right. Because they do not hold the solution to anything. They're oblivious to this. Are you aware of any other program that's done this show to show how the government is, and by the way, and working in secret? They intended with meetings that only became aware from this Republican legislator from Utah, when he found out and got documents that show that they were intending to bypass Congress and to keep it secret, stealing 16 million acres of land so they could turn it over to the Koch brothers and others and see if that's on anyone's talking points today. I defy anyone in this audience to go to any website and show me, outside of maybe Alex Jones, who is more right on more things. He was right on this. As was Jesse Ventura and the other people that are considered nut jobs, they were right on this. And because I am not a part of any of those factions, we did our homework. I found all the quotes. Everywhere out there, people are concerned. You don't see a single person on the media. You don't see a single thing said that the largest single land theft in American history, purely for exploiting the natural resources and telling the people, if you complain, if you protest, if you write a letter, we will put you on a terrorist watch list. And with that, you can be arrested. You can be rendered for torture. You can be waterboarded. You can be anything we want to do with you. So you have been warned. Is that correct or not correct?
It's absolutely correct. And I've been telling people, as you see these symbols of our freedom taken off the land, like, there goes our freedom. This is what's happening. You see these wild horses, they've always been kind of symbols of our independence and strength and, you know, our freedom. They're being put in corrals where we don't know where they are.
Oh, I know where there are. I just finished a report on this. I just finished a report last night. Do you know how many of those horses the Bureau of Land Management and others are shipping to Mexico to be processed in the meat? 55,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
55,000. Not one of them should be taken off the land. That's what's happening. The Bureau of Land Management is as corrupt an agency as exists in government. And now the Obama administration, him personally, by executive order, has allowed the complete privatization and exploitation of at least 16 million acres in secret, bypassing Congress. And with the pathetic excuses of the moral degenerates we have in Congress, he will get his way. It is only for those citizens who still have a consciousness and are not locked into a left or right ideology, who are virtually zombies, to actually speak up and do something. And I'm very hopeful that, first off, you get the local sheriffs and constables and the people within the communities to start raising hell and protesting in every town and country, a county out there. I am then hopeful that the state legislators are bombarded so that the state legislatures and the governors begin to protest this. I'm then hopeful that the people at the local level start to write about it and say, hold on a second. This is public land. This is commons. You are abusing the laws of commons. That's a constitutional egregious maneuver. These are our pastures and our fields and our forests and our roads. You're blocking all the roads across this part of America. You're destroying the roads. You're not allowing people access to community property. All because the multinational corporations say, we can make a lot of profit from this, but we need to exploit it. The government says, well, we can handle that. We did it under Clinton and the Clinton administration when we opened up the great old hardwood forest for exploitation. And because we were willing to throw footballs in the vice president's lawn and those clowns were so easily compromised, we can do it again. Well, that's true. We have no environmental movement today. It's all been corrupted. But we can sure as hell do something when it comes to individually standing up. And you know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see the 100,000 bikers go out there and just protest as only they know how to do in Utah or Wyoming. And this time of year, they'd be out there. So you ought to put the word out to them as well. They're the last free Americans. Final thoughts from you.
I think everything you're saying, people need to look at these partnerships, this backdoor partnerships where they completely bypass Congress, sign agreements with United Nations agencies whose total goal is Agenda 21, which is the action plan. And people need to remember, this is not for private property or individual rights. This is about communally and collectively owned land and group rights. They don't believe in it. You have to give up your individual rights for the good of the masses. And not that we want to see anyone suffer, any human being suffer, but we're having our freedoms taken away, too, and I think people need to open their eyes.
Unfortunately, Debbie, they won't open their eyes right now. Mm-hmm. I believe it'll take us. We're not Greece. We're sure as hell not the Middle East. We do not have 100 million young people. We don't have 100 young people willing to look at the history of abuse, the history, because we haven't had a history of abuse. The only abuse is which credit card has maxed out at the mall. We are not Ireland, England, France, Spain, Portugal, Iceland. We have been pampered. We have been over-obliged, so now it's a wake-up call. But it'll take after the next election before people finally see the full extent to which they have been co-opted and our rights usurped. And
it may be too late by then. It may be too late.
It will be too late, but it's
a done deal.
I understand, but remember, it's only when something completely collapses that you have the capacity to change it. So if America needs to lose all of its rights and we end up with a nation of a complete fascist government and a complete police state, so be it. If that's where we have to begin to make change, then that's where we'll begin to make change. And right now, the left and the right are virtually incapable of seeing any of the truth of what's occurring. Shame on Keith Urban, shame on Rachel Maddow, shame on the people for not going out there and making this an issue, and shame on that pathetic excuse of an Ed Schultz. These are just card-carrying Democrats. And they are the problem.
Well, Gary, I'm a Democrat, but I've seen what's happening because I've been traveling around. I stay open. I talk with people. I do my own research.
They don't.
Yeah.
You are an independent person who looks for the truth and acts upon it. These people can't do this because they wouldn't like to believe that in their mindset there could be this kind of hidden agenda by executive order that is completely documented and traceable, because then it would have to ask them. Well, I'll ask you a question, Debbie. Could you steal from one neighbor, not another, and not be a thief?
No.
Could you lie to one relative, not another, and not be a liar?
Well, I don't think so.
Okay, if you lie to one person, not lie to another, are you a liar or you're not a liar?
Yes. If you lie once, you're a liar.
Okay, if you cheated on one person and didn't cheat on another, are you a betrayer?
Yes.
Okay, then ask yourself this. How can the Republicans or the Democrats, who consider themselves so self-righteous and so right, how can they accept that someone can engage in these types of policies that are so un-American, unconstitutional, illegal, and egregious morally? How can they then stand and say that they support our rights and freedoms under the Constitution when at the same time they're taking away those same rights and freedoms without the Constitution? You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, they're not supporting our Constitution.
Well, they're not supporting us.
A lot of people don't realize this, Gary, but not only can the president sign executive orders, so can, like, Ken Salazar, the Secretary of the Interior. He writes executive orders, too. So the heads of these government agencies can even write executive orders. It's like little dictators.
Yeah, they don't write an executive order as the president does, but they do write summary orders that the that have the power and influence of being a czar heading an agency. And they're almost never understood, they're never read, and they're never challenged. So it's compounding power into the hands of people who have a history of being pro-genetic engineering, consolidating power within the corporate dominion to control food supply, to control energy resources, so that those who would have a different point of view are not allowed a forum or the power to confront them, even legally. Give us your email address, Debbie, so people can help with what you're doing.
You can go to, I'm a member of the board of directors of wildhorseeducation.org, so www.wildhorseeducation.org, and people can send me emails. There's a contact email, and if anyone wants to talk to me, they can email me there.
Debbie, keep up the good work out there. We will keep this alive in the public domain, and this is the number one listened to radio program in the world. This dwarfs anything. In fact, if you go up today and look at the 91 million Americans that Google Progressive Radio, in fact, we were larger than all conservative radio and all liberal radio combined on a Google search. So you're not listening to a few people. The future is independent thinking. The future is people willing to make up their own minds without being told what to think. The future is not liberal, not Democrat nor Republican. Those are dinosaurs. We know them for what they are, and their time has come and it is gone. The future is for people who are truly independent and want to choose the truth instead of ideologies. Thank you very much, Debbie.
Thank you, Gary. Bye.
I will keep this alive and
thank you, Gary.
Okay, thank you, Debbie. And I'll be going out there and recording, and I'll talking with some of the sheriffs and the people. We'll be confronting some of these Forest Service little guys standing out there telling people you can't use this road or you'll be arrested, and telling the sheriffs to shut up. When the sheriffs say, why are you harassing the citizens? It's their property. And they're told to shut up. So it's interesting to see what's going to be evolving when, what will happen the day when social anarchy breaks out in the United States. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think the outcome is going to be? What do you think is going to happen when you start imprisoning, roughing up, or killing some regular Americans? How long do you think that's going to go on? What do you think the outcome is going to be? I'm Gary Knoll. This concludes today's program. I want to thank you very much for listening.